If the teachers were allowing that to turn up on the official report, it was obvious they didn't intend to punish anyone for the nasty little skirmish in the battle room. Aren't they going to do anything? Don't they care what goes on in this school? Since he was back to the barracks earlier than usual, Ender called up the fantasy game on his desk. It had been a while since he last used it, long enough that it didn't start where he had left off. Instead, he began by the giant's corpse. Only now it was hardly identifiable as a corpse at all, unless you stood off a ways and studied it. The body had eroded into a hill entwined with grass and vines. Only the crest of the giant's face was still visible, and it was white bone like limestone protruding from a discouraged, withering mountain. Ender did not look forward to fighting with the wolf children again, but to his surprise, they weren't there. Perhaps killed once, they were gone forever. It made him a little sad. He made his way down underground, through the tunnels, to the cliff ledge overlooking the beautiful forest. Again, he threw himself down. And again a cloud caught him and carried him into the castle turret room. The snake began to unweave itself from the rug again, only this time Ender did not hesitate. He stepped on the head of the snake and crushed it under his foot. It writhed and twisted under him, and in response he twisted and ground it deeper into the stone floor. Finally, it was still. Ender picked it up and shook it until it unwove itself and the pattern in the rug was gone. Then, still dragging the snake behind him, he began to look for a way out. Instead, he found a mirror. And in the mirror, he saw a face that he easily recognized. It was Peter, with blood dripping down his chin and a snake's tail protruding from a corner of his mouth. Ender shouted and thrust his desk from him. The few boys in the barracks were alarmed at the noise, but he apologized and told them it was nothing. They went away. He looked again into his desk. His figure was still there, staring into the mirror. He tried to pick up some of the furniture to break the mirror, but it could not be moved. The mirror would not come off the wall either. Finally, Ender threw the snake at it. The mirror shattered, leaving a hole in the wall behind it. Out of the hole came dozens of tiny snakes, which quickly bit Ender's figure again and again. Tearing the snakes frantically from itself, the figure collapsed and died in a writhing heap of small serpents. The screen went blank, and words appeared. "Play again?" Ender signed off and put the desk away. The next day, several commanders came to Ender or sent soldiers to tell him not to worry. Most of them thought the extra practice sessions were a good idea, he should keep it up. And to make sure nobody bothered him, they were sending a few of their older soldiers who needed extra practice to come join him. "They're as big as most of the buggers who attacked you last night. They'll think twice." Instead of a dozen boys, there were 45 that night. More than an army. And whether it was because of the presence of older boys on Ender's side, or because they had had enough the night before, none of their enemies came. Ender didn't go back to the fantasy game, but it lived in his dreams. He kept remembering how it felt to kill the snake, grinding it in, the way he tore the ear off that boy, the way he destroyed Stilson, the way he broke Bernard's arm. And then to stand up, holding the corpse of his enemy, and find Peter's face looking out at him from the mirror. "This game knows too much about me. This game tells filthy lies. I am not Peter. I don't have murder in my heart." And then a worse fear. That he was a killer, only better at it than Peter ever was. That it was this very trait that pleased the teachers. It's killers they need for the bugger wars. It's people who can grind the enemy's face into the dust and spatter their blood all over space. Well, I'm your man. I'm the bloody bastard you wanted when you had me spawned. I'm your tool. And what difference does it make if I hate the part of me that you most need? What difference does it make that when the little serpents killed me in the game, I agreed with them and was glad?
"I didn't call you in here to waste time. How in hell did the computer do that?"
"I don't know."
"How could it pick up a picture of Ender's brother and put it into the graphics in this fairyland routine?"
"Kenograph. I wasn't there when it was programmed. All I know is that the computer has never taken anyone to this place before. Fairyland was strange enough, but this isn't Fairyland anymore. It's beyond the end of the world, and...
I know the names of the places. I just don't know what they mean.
Fairyland was programmed in. It's mentioned in a few other places. But nothing talks about the end of the world. We don't have any experience with it.
I don't like having the computer screw around with Ender's mind that way. Peter Wiggin is the most potent person in his life, except maybe his sister Valentine.
And the mind game is designed to help shape them. Help them. Find worlds they can be comfortable in.
You don't get it, do you, Major Imbu? I don't want Ender being comfortable with the end of the world. Our business here is not to be comfortable with the end of the world.
The end of the world in the game isn't necessarily the end of humanity in the Bugger Wars. It has a private meaning to Ender.
Good. What meaning?
I don't know, sir. I'm not the kid. Ask him.
Major Imbu, I'm asking you.
There could be 1,000 meanings.
Try one.
You've been isolating the boy. Maybe he's wishing for the end of this world, the battle school. Or maybe it's about the end of the world he grew up with as a little boy. His home, coming here. Or maybe it's his way of coping with having broken up so many other kids here. Ender's a sensitive kid, you know. And he's done some pretty bad things to people's bodies. He might be wishing for the end of that world.
Or none of the above.
The mind game is a relationship between the child and the computer. Together, they create stories. The stories are true, in the sense that they reflect the reality of the child's life. That's all I know.
And I'll tell you what I know, Major Imbu. That picture of Peter Wiggin was not one that could have been taken from our files here at the school. We have nothing on him, electronically or otherwise, since Ender came here. And that picture is more recent.
It's only been a year and a half, sir. How much can the boy change?
He's wearing his hair completely differently now. His mouth was redone with orthodontia. I got a recent photograph from Landside and compared. The only way the computer here in the battle school could have gotten that picture was by requisitioning it from a Landside computer. And not even one connected with the IF. That takes requisitionary powers. We can't just go into Guilford County, North Carolina, and pluck a picture out of school files. Did anyone at this school authorize getting this?
You don't understand, sir. Our battle school computer is only a part of the IF network. If we want a picture, we have to get a requisition. But if the mind game program determines that the picture is necessary...
It can just go take it.
Not just every day. Only when it's for the child's own good.
Okay, it's for his good. But why? His brother is dangerous. His brother was rejected for this program because he's one of the most ruthless and unreliable human beings we've laid hands on. Why is he so important to Ender? Why, after all this time?
Honestly, sir, I don't know. And the mind game program is designed so that it can't tell us. It may not know itself, actually. This is uncharted territory.
You mean the computer's making this up as it goes along?
You might put it that way.
Well, that does make me feel a little better. I thought I was the only one.
Valentine celebrated Ender's 8th birthday alone, in the wooded backyard of their new home in Greensboro. She scraped a patch of ground bare of pine needles and leaves, and there scratched his name in the dirt with a twig. Then she made a small teepee of twigs and needles and lit a small fire. It made smoke that interwove with the branches and needles of the pine overhead. "All the way into space," she said silently. "All the way to the battle school." No letters had ever come, and as far as they knew, their own letters had never reached him. When he first was taken, father and mother sat at the table and keyed in long letters to him every few days. Soon, though, it was once a week, and when no answers came, once a month. Now it had been 2 years since he went, and there were no letters, none at all, and no remembrance on his birthday. "He is dead," she thought bitterly, "because we have forgotten him."